talking. We're going talking today where things are popping. The Marion way, we're going to drop in on discussions of the day on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, we're going debating. We're going to debate very loud and we'll be laughing and floating high on a cloud. Phones are ringing from listeners all around on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, and we'll guess and goof and talk on Exchange. Read, debate, and think it's Exchange. Tune in, we're on. Turn on, I'm in. It's on today, the Exchange Club.
And away we go. It's a Getaway Friday here on WGH Talk Radio. Friday, August the 28th, 2026. Last Friday in the month of August. How about that? 16 minutes past the hour. Joined in studio here by Matt Morgan. And today, joining our Exchange Club panel, Democratic candidate in the 86th District House Rep race coming up in November, Kent Halloran. Kent, good to have you with us.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, everyone.
Now, Kent, big event coming up tomorrow in Marion.
Yes, sir.
Tell us about it.
Well, we, the Citizens for Democracy, a group that I am proud to say I'm an active member, Citizens for Democracy are holding another rally, and we held several rallies last year. This year, we took rallies. We took rallies a little slower. I mean, we didn't. We held one in April, but again, as summer approached, we just decided to kind of hold off on doing rallies. As the Citizens for Democracy, of course, is the Marion chapter of the nationwide group called Indivisible, and that was kind of a feeling throughout the nation is that okay. Let's kind of slow down on the rallies a little bit, and then when we get them, we do focus on them. And so we do have a rally that'll be Saturday, tomorrow at noon at the courthouse where they have been traditionally held. And the rally is for, it's called a Rally for Freedom, Affordability, and Human Decency. That's the theme. And again, we encourage anybody who is interested, make your own signs. We certainly have some signs you can use. And whether you want to rally against the flock cameras or you want to rally against the war in Iran, no holds barred.
Now, no longer called a No Kings rally. Is there a reason for that?
Not this time. No Kings rally was, we held the No Kings in, that was in April. But it's not that we are in favor of kings. It's just that we changed the theme a little bit this time just to kind of focus on other things that are of great importance to us.
Now, you were at the flock camera rally last Saturday. Between 10 and 15 people showed up. What did you make of that?
Well, first of all, that was not a rally that Citizens for Democracy actually initiated. We were going there to support it, and as it turns out, I think our folk were the majority of the people that did show up. We were a little disappointed in the rally, of course. I mean, when you have 15 people showing up, but those 15 people were vociferous. They made their opinions held, you know, known, and that's all. That's what they're for, and that's. In that case, it was a success.
We now know that the mayor's veto was not overturned. 4-4 was the vote. A matter of fact, the people who voted to prohibit the flock cameras in Marion lost a vote in the mayor's veto override. Why do you think not only did they lose a vote, but failed to overturn the mayor's veto?
Oh, I don't think they, again, given the makeup of our council, I was surprised we had 4 votes in favor of turning it over, to be frank.
5.
Well, initially we had 5.
5, right. They lost one, yeah.
But we lost one, so I was surprised we had that many. Because, again, overturning a veto is a serious, it's a serious job and it's a serious thought, and I believe it was Councilman Clark was the one that just said, you know what, I'm with the mayor on this one now, and he has a right to change his opinion, and that's what he did.
Matt, what do you think?
I don't think that Mr. Clark really ever changed his opinion. I think that he said that he voted in favor of banning them because he got a lot of emails and whatnot. But I think that once the veto came down, I think that I don't think that he was, you know, like I said, he was never a fan of the legislation to begin
yeah,
with.
Yeah, I don't believe I don't believe he was a strong vote against them initially.
Yeah.
I think he was probably on the fence a little bit. And again, he's the same party as the mayor. And so I imagine that he just didn't feel it. He didn't feel his opposition to flock cameras was strong enough to go against the mayor.
How do you feel the nature of people's protest against the mayor's veto and against the flock cameras in general played into this? The FOP was terribly attacked on social media when they gave their opinion that the mayor should veto this legislation. The mayor was attacked for even thinking and vetoing this legislation, both. There were council people who were threatened physically, former council people, from coming to last Monday's meeting. Two people were thrown out of the meeting during the meeting. The nature in which people... getting rid of a flock cameras, why did it devolve into that sort of rhetoric? Because I honestly, I can say that there are at least two people on that council who I know were on the fence about overturning the veto. And that's why at the next committee meeting, and it's already been announced on, I believe, September the 8th, it is going back to legislation and codes, not to get rid of flock cameras, but to put some safeguards in. And I think that will pass city council, and I don't think there will be a veto. But I think Mr. Clark might have been one of them who listened to this rhetoric. Mrs. Larkin, second ward council person, was on this program saying she was looking at it all, and she didn't know if she was going to vote to overturn the mayor's veto until she was there. But I think they saw all this attacking and all this rhetoric and said, you know, I don't know about this legislation, but this is not the way to go about it.
Oh, I agree. I think we have, and it goes beyond flock cameras in this country. I mean, it goes to, I mean, we have gone from opposing each other's viewpoints, but respectfully, to right now, we're, you know, and again, I am not in favor of the death threats. I have gotten to the point where I barely even go on social media anymore, which I keep getting criticized for, because you're running for office, you're supposed to take advantage of that. And it's, I'm just, social media, to me, is a place where people can, or where people feel like they can say whatever they want and get away with it. And okay, you know, I'm all for freedom, personal freedom and freedom of speech, but by the same token, we still need to live together. And until we start respectfully disagreeing, rather than just vehemently disagreeing, you know, and I don't mean this literally, but going guns a-blazing. I mean, it's like the flock cameras, part of the problem with the flock cameras comes down to a matter of trust. And right now, there are a lot of people in this community that don't trust the mayor, that don't trust the city council, and don't trust basically anyone except for possibly the people that actually work for the city, you know, police and fire. I just think there's a huge lack of trust. And the other issue, and the issue that's probably a bigger issue for me with this flock cameras, is it, you know, I have my trust issues with the administration, but my bigger issue is with this company that has all this data, and they have no guardrails. There's very little anybody can do as far as soliciting from them. Heck, you know, they could bury their data and they can do whatever they want with it. And that's my concern, more so than, you know, than just having these cameras peeking at our license plate. And I think the other issue a lot of people are looking at is the, and I hate using this term, but the slippery slope argument. Oh, first it's going to be flock cameras, but then, oh, we're going to replace those with newer equipment that can also, well, they can pan and they can look wherever they want to go. And again, this was kind of, I was made very much aware of this when my wife and I went on a vacation to New Orleans. We were staying on Bourbon Street, and right along Bourbon Street, there was a camera that was a pan and tilt camera. It would face one direction, and then automatically it would swivel around. And it was kind of scary. I understood why they did it, because for your listeners who don't know, there was a mass killing on Bourbon Street with a vehicle. Somebody turned down during the height of, I don't think it was Mardi Gras, but during the height of, you know, partying on Bourbon Street, and somebody drove his car through the crowd, and I think about 20 people were killed.
You know what's strange about this whole thing to me? And listen, I understand the people who are in favor of getting rid of the flock cameras do not like when people use the argument, if I'm not doing anything wrong, why do I care? Okay, I got that. Okay, but let's say I owned a convenience store, little convenience store, and I don't have the money for a security system because I'm new, and somebody comes in and robs me at gunpoint. Most likely, I am going to have cameras up before I open that store back up because something has happened. Just like you said, somebody's killed on Bourbon Street. Mm-hmm. Now they have a pan and tilt camera there on Bourbon Street. Why is it that private citizens, private businesses are entitled to do these things when crime is there or they fear crime? I mean, people have worked in businesses for years. You know, don't go to the bank with the drop without two people. Do it at different times of the day. Never be consistent in dropping your money.
Yeah.
Okay, you do those things not because they're convenient. You do them because you're trying to prevent crime. Why are flock cameras not seen that way? Because, listen, I'm not saying they should be in your home. I'm not saying they should be in your front yard. And I'm not saying they should follow you around, any one person who's not committing a crime. But why are they not seen that way?
I think many people wonder just how effective they are as a deterrent. Again, if you are walking into a private business, your convenience store, for example, they're walking into a convenience store. In most cases, that the convenience store will actually put a sign up saying, you are on camera, or smile, we've got your picture. And that's part of your choice. You could choose not to shop there. Now, most people don't. Most people walk in knowing when they've got that camera there, they know it's there, and they know, you know, for whatever reason, I don't think the camera prevents people from going in and robbing a convenience store. In fact, the fact that we have so many people who do so on camera kind of proves that. And I think,
but it might catch somebody.
It might catch somebody. You're right. And but I think that's the concern that people have, is kind of like, okay, but they're storing now. I think the state legislation is planning to reduce the 30-day maintenance requirement for records. In other words, that I think they were going to maintain it for a month, and even I think Flock came out and announced that they were going to reduce the data retention to 7 days. I just think the people, you know, they are, I think most people are inundated. The fact that, you know, everyone, all three of us have a camera in our pocket right now that we can take pictures of people. And I think people are just becoming more aware of the value of their privacy. And again, you can go into a store and you take that risk. You take that, you know, you see the most stores, obviously they post that. So I think it's just, you know, that's an accepted risk. And I think people are just tired of having to accept more and more risk of, lack of privacy. I mean, we've got very little as it is.
What do you think, Matt?
As far as the whole banning of the flock cameras goes, I suppose. The flock cameras, I don't think necessarily have to be done away with. I would just rather they were done away with.
Oh, and by the way, I do want to say, if somebody would like to call in, feel free. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Okay, go ahead.
But there's, like, I don't know. It just seems that there's, there's just no compromise to be made on this issue for some reason. I don't know. I don't really know why that is. The main problem that people... Sorry. The main problem that people tend to have with the flock cameras is that they you know, will, like, keep, like a running log for, like, you know, 30 however many days of, like, you know, every time your license plate's been dinged, where at, you know, what time, that kind of thing. When Marion started their conversation, I was looking into what other places have done to their flock cameras. And, there's been legislation put into where, essentially it'll you know, hit your license plate, and then if your license plate is not on, like, if you don't have a warrant for your arrest, or, like I said, you're on a stolen vehicle list, or, you know, something like that, it's required to delete it within a day. So then there is no running log of where the people are going. So, I think that's okay.
Well, and I understand that as well. But again, there also the other concern many people have is there have been instances in Columbus. There have been instances where the flock cameras were misused or abused by the, you know, individual police officers. I think one of them was tracking an ex-girlfriend or something, and they are open to abuse. And I think part of the problem, and this you can go through our history. This is traditional in human history. We develop something, and then the ramifications occur, and we don't deal with those until later. You know, good, and that's my business, quite frankly. When you're dealing with, as populations grew, we kept putting more and more pipes in the ground to the point where, oh, you mean we can't keep putting all that stormwater into the ground, into the same pipe that serves the city because it's now flooding downtown? And so, you know, it's another one of those things that many people don't believe there are suitable guardrails in place yet. Now, if we'd have put them up with better guardrails to begin with, maybe it wouldn't have been as big a deal. But right now, it's in the news. I know WOSU had an article talking about the abuses that the city of Columbus discovered in their audit. Now, I know that we've done, there have been some Freedom of Information Act requested of the city, and the city has complied. So I don't personally feel that the city has done any, or any of the individuals in the city have done anything wrong. It's just that they, you know, these guardrails aren't there at present. Now, like you said, the state and many localities are trying to put them up. We don't want a system that is abusable.
Well, I mean, hindsight's 20/20, I suppose. But
well, you know what? Just we'll move to national politics here for a second, because there is a little bit of a controversy going on with the governor's race, and it revolves around this new ad. Let's listen to this ad. You've heard it this morning, and then we'll come back and talk about the controversy. This is an ad for the campaign of Vivek Ramaswamy.
I had to put my mother in a nursing home because she had fallen. A few weeks after that is when Amy Acton shut down the state. My mother didn't understand it. It traumatized her. She didn't know why her family couldn't come visit her. 2 months later, she died. Amy Acton is to blame for this. It happened to a lot of families, and it shouldn't have happened. I will never forgive Amy Acton for what she did to my family. Ohio can't afford liberal Amy Acton. I had to put...
All right, that's the new ad. Kent, what's your response to the ad?
Well, my response to the ad is it's misplaced. Amy Acton made recommendations, but I believe it's the governor who closed the state. And that this is the kind of advertisement that I don't like. This is my first time of actually seeing it. I'm not sure when that rolled out, but it's false. She didn't close the state. Now upon her recommendation, the governor did, but a lot of people were closing a lot of things, and it was more than just the state of Ohio that was closed at this time.
Here's Amy Acton's response as of today. New reporting from the Columbus Dispatch reveals that Vivek Ramaswamy's newest ad features a GOP activist who falsely blames Dr. Acton for isolating her late mother during the pandemic. The Dispatch verified records proving the activist's mother was from Kentucky, belonging to a church in Kentucky, and died July 25, 2020, at a hospice facility in Kentucky, 6 weeks after Dr. Acton stepped down as health director. The activist, Linda Caudill, served as a delegate for Trump in 2016 and 2024, sparked controversy as a volunteer for former U.S. Rep. Jim Renacci's 2017 campaign for governor, and is pictured in a viral photo of protesters gathered outside the Ohio State House on April 13, 2020, to oppose DeWine's pandemic policies. Okay. So, that's the Acton campaign response. Now, one problem with the campaign's response, just to be factual, Jim Renacci did not run for governor in 2017. He ran for governor in 2022. So I'm not sure if they're talking about his governor's run or his Senate run. Hmm. And, if it is his governor's run, then it wouldn't be shocking, because if they said her mother died in 2020, so if she's supporting Renacci and Renacci's campaign was heavily against DeWine in the Republican primary for his stance during COVID. So that really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, and to have the date wrong in your press release I think is not very good, but that's that.
Yeah, I agree. You know, especially when you're putting stuff on print, there's got to be somebody checking it. I mean, it's, and even a simple running it through a ChatGPT or one of these other AIs might have caught that. Maybe, I don't know, maybe that is a kind of a reaction that they wanted to get out there quickly. I don't know. It's inexcusable that they got something as easily verified as the date wrong. But I think the bigger point is this person an activist from Kentucky? I mean, I don't know if that's fact or not. I assume it is.
Well, here's the confusing part. Okay. When you get down to the facts of this, because the Acton campaign does say some fact, they say Caudill is no stranger to Republican politics in Ohio. She served as a delegate for Trump in 2016 and 2024. She also sparked controversy as a volunteer for U.S. Rep. Jim Renacci's 2017 campaign for governor. Again, he did not run for governor in 2017, in part for sharing a meme that suggested violence against then Secretary of State John Husted. So I don't know, again, if they're talking about his campaign for Senate or his campaign for governor. And I don't, sharing a meme is important information, I guess.
Everyone shares memes. I mean, that's what they're there for.
I mean, I'm not saying you should suggest violence against anybody, the lieutenant governor, but this is what your response is to this ad. Is that she shared a meme? And I also don't understand. They say all that about the mother, and then they say the ad doesn't identify the nursing home or specify where Caudill's mother spent her final months. But her obituary, first reported by the liberal website TiffinOhio.net and verified by the State House Bureau, indicates that she was from Kentucky, belonged to a church in Kentucky, and died July 25th, 2020 at a hospice facility in Kentucky. Okay. Well, now, see, I'm confused because Cincinnati, which is where this Caudill woman lives, is not far from Kentucky. So it is perfectly logical to believe that if your mother fell and broke her hip, you might bring her to a nursing home in Ohio where you live, and then if you find out that she's getting ready to kick off, you might send her to a hospice in Kentucky. That's not unbelievable. I don't know that's what happened, but neither do they. So I don't understand, because they're even kind of saying that. They're saying, well, listen, we know that she died in Kentucky. We know that she's from Kentucky. We know that her address was in Kentucky, but we don't know what nursing home she was in.
Well, if she was, but again, you was she complaining? The other concern would be, okay, if the hospice in Kentucky is factual, which I have no reason to believe it isn't. If it was factual, then and again, that's where you spend the last few months of your life, then you can go to Kentucky, can you not? If Kentucky was wide open when Ohio had its doors shut, you could have gone to Kentucky and spent time with your mother.
Yes.
But the simple fact is nothing was open. I mean, it's all of these ads, and I saw a previous one from Vivek's campaign. I saw a previous one that, again, talked about how she closed Ohio. It's like every place was closed. This was the normal reaction. And was it right or wrong? Hindsight, as Matt just said, is 2020. You can look at, like, face masks. They found out that, oh, yeah, the cloth face masks, further information, further research showed, okay, the cloth face masks did nothing. And in fact, I think most people thought the surgical face masks did very little, as far as they didn't prevent microorganisms. But we learned that after the fact. At the time, we were struggling because we had not had a pandemic of that nature since World War I, since the Spanish flu. We have not in our lifetime, we have not had that kind of pandemic. And again, the first Trump administration pretty much cut back a lot of our preparation facility. So we were doing, and it wasn't just Ohio, and it wasn't just Governor DeWine, and it wasn't Amy Acton. It was the entire United States was closing down.
But isn't it unfair then? A little, I don't know. I'll call it ironic instead of hypocritic. But isn't it a little ironic, though, that Amy Acton's whole career, I mean, I highly doubt we would know who she is if it wasn't for the pandemic, if it wasn't for the daily briefings, if it wasn't for being on television, if it wasn't for telling people what to do. I believe she got an award from the JFK Institute for her decisions during COVID. And she did advise the governor. Now, ultimately, it was the governor's decision, and he said that. But if you're going, that's where your whole identity came from. That's where your whole career came from. They call you Dr. Acton. Can then you say, on the other hand, but I really had nothing to do with it.
No, you can't. That's absolutely correct. I mean, I know she has said that the decision was made by the governor, which
they should have gave him the award, apparently.
Maybe so. And I, quite frankly, I don't agree with the governor on many things, but I thought his response to the pandemic at the time, I thought was the correct one. Now, hindsight, you can point at the little things like, well, obviously wearing face masks was probably not as beneficial as we thought. And you can think about other things that were said and done. But at the time, we went with what little knowledge we had about this vector. We didn't know what was going to happen.
But don't you think there's a little playing both sides of the fence on that?
Of course there is.
Right.
But again, what would have been better? Let's just go as life normal, and who knows how many people would have died as a result of that.
Right. But what's strange to me, I mean, these are political ads. I mean, I when I look at a political ad, I'm guessing that person's going to vote for Vivek. That's why they're doing the ad. I'm guessing that's how she felt. I don't think she's making it up that's how she felt in regard to her mother. And that's what it is. So I don't quite understand that. It's kind of like when Amy Acton does the Ohio's a flyover state. Now, is that really all the way true? Do we really have Vivek's flight logs? Do we know that he's really flying over, not driving in a car around this state?
Well, I don't know how many of the flight logs we have, but there you can, he's, I don't know if he's strictly used campaign finances, but I know that, you have to list expenditures and whatnot.
Yes, he's used it.
He's used campaign finances for, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of
right.
of jets.
Right, but is he just flying over the state? I don't think so.
Well, he's flying from, rally to rally.
That's not a flyover state. That's not what the implication is in that statement. So, they're political statements. Well, they're political ads.
Absolutely. And for some reason, truth in advertising is waived for political ads.
Isn't that nice?
Oh, I am so grateful I don't have broadcast television because I don't get many of the political ads. Now, I do get them on, I don't pay for YouTube, so naturally, you watch 5 minutes of it and get 20 commercials.
Oh, there's a lot of them on there now.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they're everywhere.
They're starting to show up everywhere now, and again, that's the world we live in right now.
But, I think we talked off the air about the DJ the Barber ad, and you got to say this, whatever firm Vivek is using, they're making very compelling spots at this point.
Oh, they're very good, yes.
They're very good spots. But, we, in Marion, Ohio, we had DJ the Barber on last Friday. I put that interview up, over 200 comments in response to DJ the Barber on this show, just saying that, yes, I cut Vivek's hair. Yes, I've known him for 25 years. Yes, I've spoken at his rallies. And yes, I want him to become governor. Every nasty thing possible said could be said in a comment regarding that ad. And why?
You got me. Like I said, I am very, one of my goals is not to be on try to tamp down the divisiveness. I think I've promised this on the air before. I'm not going to run a single, hate ad against my opponent. First off, I don't hate him. He's a nice guy. Do I think he's qualified for the state house? I think he's a little young. Now, 26 is a little young. But no, I'm not going to spend the money to put an attack ad out there. Now, I know he's done that especially during the primary. He hasn't attacked me, but I don't know that he thinks, I don't know if he thinks I'm much of a threat, quite frankly.
Well, he was attacked himself.
Agreed.
In the primary.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know who attacked first. It might have been Davis. It might have been him. And it doesn't matter.
It was Davis, was it not, Matt?
I believe so.
Was it Davis?
Yeah.
Because I was getting all the ads at that point, and it was, I think you're right. I think hers was the first one. But, again, if I had the money, attack it? No, I don't want to do that. We don't need any more. We've got plenty of vitriol in this country. We got plenty of people who are ready to hate the opponent. And that's not what we are.
You know, I've told this story before, but I really like it. So you can watch, like, because, you know, they televise the presidential debates now. And I was like, well, obviously, there was a first. So I wanted to watch the first televised debate. And the first televised debate was
Kennedy.
Yeah,
Nixon.
Nixon and Kennedy. And at one point in there, Richard Nixon says something along the lines of, I find myself much in agreement with Senator Kennedy. We have the same viewpoint for America, the same vision for America, just different viewpoints on how to get there. And I was like, you know, politics used to be good.
But you know what? I mean, you can watch any presidential debate up through Hillary and Trump, and they were more or less that way. They were not nasty toward each other on the stage. I mean, you get a zinger every so often that somebody would throw in there. Somebody was just talking the other day, you know, everybody always talks about Nixon Kennedy, their debate, and says, you know, well, the people who listened to it on radio thought Nixon won, the people who watched it on television thought Kennedy won. Well, I heard somebody talking about the Reagan Carter debate the other day and said that if you watch that debate on substance, Carter blows Reagan away. He knows his facts, he knows what's going on, he says it, Reagan doesn't, he's not that way. But Reagan was an actor, and he knew how to command the stage, he knew how to command it, and he spoke to the everyday people, and he also used that line, there you go again, when Carter would say something. And at the end, Reagan just asked a simple question at the end of the debate in his closing statement. He said, just ask yourself, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? That's not a heavy-duty zinger, but it mattered because people weren't. But Carter had a much more... debate coaches would have given that debate to Carter easily. But Reagan knew television, and he knew how to get it across. And a few weeks later, he won the election in a landslide.
Very true. And I think one of the other statements he made in one of the debates with Carter was he used the phrase, government isn't the solution, government is the problem. Now, that resonated with a lot of people, and that is what created the Tea Party, and that further kind of pushed the GOP further and further to the right.
Well, Reagan's also, by the way, not for nothing, this was an actor. I believe the only person ever to be elected to the presidency who was an out-and-out actor. Obviously, Trump was a television personality, but Reagan was an actor. Yep. And in the Mondale debates, those are fascinating. The first Mondale debate, because the age, issue in that election was age. Reagan was going to be the oldest president ever elected. And people felt he was slowing down. His press conferences, he would act like he didn't hear the reporters. He would sometimes not be as awake. There was the thing going around that he ate jelly beans and took naps. And during the first debate, he does seem a little confused. He doesn't seem right. And his campaign panicked because he was coming off so bad in the first debate. And the news was he had lost it. And there's that famous debate clip they play during presidential debates every time where the reporter, it wasn't even Mondale, the reporter says, you know, there are reports you fell, Mr. President, there are reports you fell asleep in cabinet meetings and that you take naps and blah, blah, basically talking about age. And Reagan didn't even answer the question. All he says is, you know, I will not make age an issue of this campaign. I will not exploit my opponent's youth and inexperience. And Mondale can be seen on the camera laughing at that statement. And Reagan, like an actor, you can see it. He just took a drink of the water. He let the laugh continue during the statement. He put it down, and that night the election was over. Reagan won 49 states.
Yep.
Age was no longer an issue.
And that is absolutely correct. And again, it was... You nailed it, though. It wasn't down to his great intellect or his great grasp of the facts. It was simply down to he knew his audience and he knew how to talk to them. And you know, that's where Reagan, they called him the great communicator. Again, I had my differences with Reagan, but again, he was that. He was an actor.
For one of our listeners out there today, I Googled and the fact-checking was investigated independently by the Columbus Dispatch reporter, and Acton campaign recognized it. Also, Renacci did campaign in 2017 for the 2018 election and dropped out in January 2018 and ran for the Senate instead. Now, that may be true. I don't remember that. It may be true.
Yeah, that's. I'll trust that person's fact-checking.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Because I don't recall that, but if that's where this woman... Again, I guess it goes back to a meme.
So much is going back to memes. And even, you can even look at, you know, Ramaswamy's, some of his negative commercials are essentially an elongated meme. And that's, you know, it's the old, I can remember when Bob Dole ran for president, the one thing he was told that, you know, you got to say your name three times to get the point across, or you have to say something three times to get your point across. And so he would say something three times to get his point across, three times to get a point across. You know, he got very repetitive, and it became kind of the downfall of his campaign a little bit.
Well, I mean, think of no wonder people don't want to debate. I mean, do you remember in 92, they said the election was over during the debate when George H.W. Bush looked at his watch during the debate.
Yeah.
You know, and they got him on, and it probably was. You just don't do that. And Bill Clinton was very good in those debates when they took questions. You know, if you look at that debate with Bill Clinton in 92, where it was the first time they ever took questions from the audience in a debate, every time somebody asks Bill Clinton a question, he does answer it, but he always starts out by going, "Where are you from? How many kids do you have?" He always got like a question in like that, showed he was interested in the person, which I'm sure he wasn't, but then he would answer the question. And you got George Bush, the president, over there looking at his watch, like how long left. And he could have been looking at his watch, you know, has this guy been talking too long here? Are they timing him right? Who knows why he looked at his watch, but it wasn't good.
Well, and then, you know, George W. Bush was also criticized, and you want to speak about it, talk about a meme, his famous, you know, "Read my lips, no new taxes," became probably one of the first memes that kind of, it was attached to him, and it followed him everywhere he went. Because he couldn't keep that promise.
Right. So here we are.
You know, people like to beat him over the head for that, but I think, you know, I think that he probably had to raise the taxes.
Oh, I'm not debating that. It's just the problem was when he stands up there and makes that promise
and then the economy was doing poor.
And you know, it's what in, you know, the president and all the way down, when you're talking about a politician or an office holder, not a politician, an office holder, they have to make compromises. That is what, that's what democracy is about, because, you know, not everyone is going to be on the far left or the far right, and we've got to bring it to the center. And, you know, I don't know if we've lost that or if...
Yep, it's gone.
It's gone.
Well, but you know what's interesting? And I just want to get this on the record about George H.W. Bush, because he's the one-term president in there. One of the few we've had in recent eras. Biden's the other. But the sad thing to me about George H.W. Bush, maybe even more than Biden or Carter, who were one-term presidents, is Reagan, who preceded him, two-term president... Very, very popular. Reagan, sometimes he's in the top 10 of the greatest presidents of all time. Clinton followed George H.W. Bush. Clinton's usually pretty close to the top 10 of presidents. You will hear people say they loved Reagan. There were the Reagan Democrats. Clinton had the same thing. You know, Clinton had Clinton Republicans. They were both incredibly popular. But if you look at George W. Bush's 4 years, George H.W. Bush, people associate the end of the Cold War with Reagan. It actually ended under George H.W. Bush. The Berlin Wall came down under George H.W. Bush. George H.W. Bush, the tax cuts that we're talking about. A lot of people say those are the tax cuts that gave the great economy to Bill Clinton. Were those George H.W. Bush tax cuts that he promised not to make? But yet, he gets ran through the mud as this one-term president. Let me take the call, and then we're going to come to Kent. Go ahead.
Hello, Scott. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
And your guest there. Guest, I didn't get your name, but you know how to play the game, and you're very good at speaking back and taking care of yourself. I commend you. Have a good job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Kent Halloran, Democratic candidate in the 86th District. All right, Kent, you were
going to
say.
Well, I was going to say that, you know, you can go through our history to the second president who followed a very popular president and only had one term. You can go, you know, and you can almost look each time a person, whether they were the vice president or whether they were just somebody else. Again, another one, which I'm very familiar with, William Howard Taft. He broke up more trusts. He broke up twice the number of trusts. He broke up 90 trusts, except Theodore Roosevelt was given credit for being the trust buster.
And he became the chief justice of the Supreme Court.
But he was a one-term president because he followed a popular president.
Well, do you think that if Taft would have gotten into office and Roosevelt didn't already start breaking up the monopolies, that Taft would have followed and broken up monopolies? Well, I guess Taft would have been the one to start breaking up monopolies.
I don't know if Taft wouldn't have been elected. He was, T.R. asked him to, you know, begged him to run for president. And so I don't think.
I went after him. Woo.
Yeah. I don't think Taft would have run for president.
But he got stuck in a bathtub, so we all have to forget that he was Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Forget that he was the big trust buster. And he didn't even get stuck in a bathtub.
Well, and again, you can go back.
It's horrible.
You talk about Andrew Jackson was a fairly popular president in his day. The guy who came after him, one term, Martin Van Buren. So I think that is, especially if you are having to, if you'll step into the shoes of a popular, especially as they're going out, a popular president, you're going to have some. It's going to be difficult to maintain the popularity, and especially if you look at
Andrew Jackson was nuts.
Certainly, well, happened to Gore.
Well, Gore got defeated. You also look at even Nixon. I mean, Dwight Eisenhower was fairly popular, and he, of course, Nixon ran immediately following Ike. And,
but that could have been old Joe Kennedy's money too in Chicago and Texas.
Absolutely.
And I think that's pretty much, even Democrats will say that now. That's the thing about Richard Nixon that's why Nixon to me is endlessly fascinating, and not, you know, people call him a crook and all this sort of thing. Okay, fine. But he is an endlessly fascinating character because everybody, even he in 1960, knew that more or less the election was stolen from him. That if they had done recounts in Chicago, especially in Mayor Daley's Cook County in Chicago, and that if they had went down to Texas where Lyndon Johnson was from, that they would have found more than enough votes for Richard Nixon to have won that election, especially in Chicago. Because if Nixon, I believe, had carried Chicago, he would have won the election. So, I mean, would have won Illinois, which would have won him the election. And Nixon said, don't do a recount because the country shouldn't have to go through that. Same man who 12 years later is doing a cover-up. What a weird guy.
Well, he was, but again, he was also one of the best environmental presidents we ever had. Imagine that, a Republican who was fighting for the environment. But it was under Nixon's administration that we got the Environmental Protection Agency. Good, bad, or indifferent, at least their job is to protect the environment.
Well, Nixon, I mean, there's a tremendous stories about where, Nixon used the Southern Strategy to win in 1968, but everything he promised those people, you know, people don't remember. Nixon is the one who actually enforced desegregating the schools in the South, but he never wanted that in the press. He never wanted people to know that because he had promised all them, the senators and the Congress people from the South, if they backed him, that he was going to be against desegregating anything. Nixon did it. And he said he used to tell his aides, all his aides used to say, don't pay attention to what I say, pay attention to what I do.
No, there's wisdom there as well, but
he's a con, that's what I got.
Well, I don't know if that was a con. I think he had to do what he had to do to be elected, but
yeah, conned a whole bunch of people, yeah.
But that isn't what he felt.
Yeah. it's one of those things that, and especially when you get to that level of politician, you say what you have to get elected, and we've gone more and more into that. I mean, we can talk about the promises that were made by the current president, promises that were made and possibly not kept from Biden, all the way back to, you know, John Adams writing, you know, signing the Alien and Sedition Act.
Now, I do want to let people know we're going to be back on tonight, 8 to 10, and Matt will be on from 10 to 11. Kent, remind us about the rally tomorrow.
There will be the Stand for Your Rights, a rally for freedom, affordability, and human decency. It'll be held tomorrow at noon to 2 o'clock at the county courthouse.
Perfect. Ken Halloran, Democratic candidate for the 86th District House Rep seat this coming November, and I'm sure you'll be back before the election, and we'll talk more about that.
I hope so.
Ken Halloran, Matt Morgan for this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
It was a lot more adenoidal than mine, and that was pretty much it. You know, of course, we had the standard, "Hey, that's me!" Which I